Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everyone. This is Deb Karen, your host of Culture Crush RX, brought to you by Anahata Marketing. This show is where we dive into your prescription for a crush-worthy culture. We chat with local business leaders about how to build a positive company culture and how it impacts the success of a business. Today, I have a really cool guest in studio today. I'm joined by Sarah Mertel, the CEO at the Young Mind Community Center, which is an inclusive education center that focuses on excellence and innovation in early autism intervention. So you have a preschool where you kind of combine children with autism and typical children and provide them with programs that benefit all, sounds like, right?
We do, yeah. We were looking at what every child needs to reach their highest potential. And whether you have autism or not, it starts in early childhood. So we decided to bridge the best of two worlds. So we really focus on excellence in early education and then bringing the clinical skills that people have learned in working with kids with autism, whether it's speech and language or occupational therapy, behavior analysis, psychology, and bringing those together. So all of our kids, whether they have autism or not, really benefit from those specialized skill sets.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Sarah, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Before we dive too much into more about the Young Mind Center and culture there, I always like to get to know my guests a little bit. So tell me, what was your very first job?
Oh, goodness. It was at a summer camp called Cottontail Ranch in Malibu, California, my freshman year of college. And it was a pretty incredible experience. In high school, I played a lot of sports, so I didn't have a job. So my first one, was at a summer camp at Cottontail Ranch.
In Malibu, that sounds pretty idyllic.
It was pretty crazy. Yeah, we had some very wealthy kids.
Yeah.
And from all over the world. I remember Ben Stiller's son came and we would always ask him to do an announcement every time so that we could hear him do the Bueller.
How perfect. That's funny. Awesome. Well, you touched a little bit on what the school is. You said you're a relatively new facility, correct? You just opened last fall?
We did, yeah. Okay. So we have two different components. We have Young Mind Center, which is the clinical piece, and then Young Mind Community Center, which is the nonprofit. And that the physical structure, and that just opened in September. Young Mind Center has been around since 2011. So just looking at the field and deciding what we could do to deepen our impact, we decided that this was the direction that we could take. So we made a pretty big pivot here a few months ago.
Yeah, that's really interesting, too, because I don't know if it's just that all these awareness campaigns are working very well or if instances are on the rise or we're just better at diagnosing. But it does seem like there's a larger conversation going on about autism and the needs that these children have. I assume that this was born out of you recognizing that this is something that our community needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was that. So it started with Dr. Amanda Wood founded the Young Mind Center in 2011, and she just did diagnostics. The problem was that so many parents after a diagnosis say, what now? And so she wanted to help fill that gap. So Emily Mariner and her got together and started the piece where we do the therapy and intervention. And then from there, we, you know, all the research is coming out showing the early intervention is really the best because the brain is the most malleable. Mm. So you can help children to pay attention to learning opportunities in their environment. A lot of times children with autism are more object-based, so they're more interested in things and in people. So a big focus is to get them to learn from the humans in their environment. And that really has the biggest impact when children are really young.
Yeah.
So yeah, starting there and saying, what can we do to make the biggest impact and seeing that this is it.
Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about the fact that you are bringing together typical children or children that are not identified as autistic with children with autism. I imagine there's a benefit to both sides of that. Like the children that obviously are dealing with autism, they need a special structure to learn, probably very unique to each individual, as do any child
right.
needs that. So what are the benefits to the typical children in being part of that program as well?
Sure. One of the biggest benefits is we have a 3-to-1 child to adult teacher ratio. So just the amount of interactions with adults where you get language modeled or you get facilitated interactions with your peers is pretty unheard of. You don't see that. We also have all of just the specialization areas like I discussed. So we have every day in a classroom, we'll have our SLP, our speech language pathologist, come in, and an occupational therapist, and they run tabletop activities with the kids. So they're working on communication and fine and gross motor, and all kids need those areas to develop when they're young.
Right.
So just like the really specialized knowledge, like I talked about earlier, is so incredible. And also our kids with autism have strengths in really different areas and areas where they need growth. So just that interaction, I think, is so meaningful for kids to start young and just understand that everybody is a little bit different. But
yeah.
I would say just the quality of our education is pretty unusual.
Yeah. Well, that ratio, certainly, because I know that when my child was in preschool, my gosh, I used to walk in to pick her up and think, how are they keeping track of all of these children?
Right. Yeah.
It's a lot for maybe two teachers in a classroom. So not to knock those schools, but certainly she wasn't getting a lot of one-on-one attention, I'm sure.
We have about six people or adults in the classroom. We have a certified teacher. And then the other people that are assisting, the assistants, are behavior instructors, and they're all incredibly skilled and trained. So also the difference in a lot of preschools are team also has a really strong background, bachelor's degrees, years of experience. So it's pretty different in terms of what you can compare it to in the field.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see that. So your organization, you say that you guys have a coaching culture. Tell me a little bit about what that means to you and how you foster that within your teams.
Sure. So we talk about our responsibility to bring out the best in our children. And then that has to also apply to our team. So everything that we talk about in working through with our kids, building potential, we talk about positive reinforcement. We have a ratio with our kids that we have to give 5 positive things to every 1 corrective feedback for our kids. And all of that also applies to our team. So a coaching culture means that it's everybody's responsibility to see themselves as an individual that can help the other person to be better. And it doesn't mean you're constantly picking on somebody or you feel like it's just always you're getting all this feedback. It's that we're a team. And really, as a team, it's our responsibility to be the very best versions of ourselves as individuals and as a whole. So it's little things from, we talk about oftentimes making the mention. So Jonathan Raymond has a book called Good Authority, and he talks about the cycle of feedback and how a lot of times in cultures we wait too long to say anything. So we oftentimes we don't let things go too far. So if we see something that's happened, you know, a few times, we'll say, hey, I noticed that this happened. And so you don't make it something big so people can right away make the changes that they need to see made. So a coaching culture is really about, it is our responsibility. And I'm mostly talking about leadership or people, you know, so it's our responsibility to help everybody to be the best. And as a coach, you know that if you have a team, it's on you if they're not performing. And you also know if you have a team and they are performing, it's on them, right? So that also is something that is really prevalent in our culture, where if people are doing well, you need to give them the credit. And if they're not doing well, you need to figure out where the miss is and what we need to do to fill in. There's some sort of communication breakdown or they're not getting the coaching that they need.
Yeah, I like that concept of 5 positives for every negative, so that at least people feel, okay, well, I'm doing a lot of things right. Oh, I can just correct this one little thing. It kind of gives you a little bit of confidence if you're not thinking, oh my gosh, I have worked in places in the past where you only get told when you're doing something wrong, but you never get told when you're doing something right. And that certainly wears on someone's spirit. So that's a good practice. I like that you're matching it up with how you treat the children as well.
Yeah. And I think when you're only focusing on what people are doing wrong, you're telling them what not to do.
Yeah.
And so we focus on, especially with kids, you always want to tell them what to do. And it's the exact same with adults. And we talk a lot about, you know, we believe that we're a strengths-based culture. So what are people doing well? And then how can we build on that to really fill in the gaps where they need areas of growth? Mm-hmm. So it just, but that just, like, think the 5-to-1 is a really good accountability for us, because you can actually, like, kind of catch yourself if you feel like, you know, we all have some good days where, you know, you're going in and you're giving people all the positive feedback and making them better. And then you have other days where it could be the same situation that you're looking at and all you're seeing is what's going wrong. Yeah. So that's when you can have this kind of tool to say, like, okay, I need 1, 2. Okay, I got 5. Now I can say something where I need something corrective, because that way you're looking for what's going right.
That's, I love that. I actually have been trying to practice that with my daughter. And I know that sometimes I'll have days where I'm like, oh my gosh, I've like said, you know, pick up your socks, do this, do that, do that. And she will literally say, oh my God, I can't do anything right. And I'm like, oh gosh, I need to give her some positive feedback right now because she's feeling that pressure. So I could see how that's a really good way to keep people motivated, I think.
Yeah.
It's very smart. So as far as pulling together this staff that you think, you know, everybody wants to pull together the best staff. Obviously, your culture is dependent on good people. So what do you look for when you're looking for your staff? What do you define as the ideal team player in your organization?
Sure. And I would even say in that question, we constantly refer to ourselves as a team and only team, which is a lot more letters if you're going to say, you know, team member. However, right. It's just in terms of like establishing the culture and what it means. We really are looking for team members first. So the number one thing is putting the we before the I. And that isn't necessarily in being someone that is going to roll over. You have to be a team player, but that's also putting the we before the I is also standing up for yourself in certain situations and letting people know what your strengths are. So the three things that we talk about in terms of what we look for with our team is community, commitment, and courage. So the community is, you know, being humble, but also making sure that you see the strengths in others and you understand who you need to get around the table. And we start from the very beginning with when somebody, in terms of how, what do we do when we're looking for people, from the jump, when somebody shows interest, we send out the very first thing with our application is our core values. And we have them broken out so they're really behavioral. Like we specifically define what community looks like. So I think one of the first ones is I put the we before I and always look out for the interests of the team. Or I understand the strengths in myself and the strengths in others and know who I have to get around the table so that people can look at this and say like, oh, wow, this is something I want to be a part of. Or this sounds like a lot. Yeah. It sounds like they're asking of a lot of me, not just like to show up to work, because that's part of our thing, too. We don't really believe that you can separate who you are at work from who you are at home. We know that a lot of our strengths. Yes. In our work life are our strengths in our home life and the opposite.
Yes.
So from the very beginning, we start with that. And then moving through the application process, it's always part of the conversation. We ask people to identify their own values and then how they can match them up to ours. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that's an absolute non-starter if they haven't even looked at the core values or can speak to them in a fairly well-versed manner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, and then in training from the very first day, we talk about what this looks like, how they think it would show up in the day. And then it's just become part of who we are in our culture. So it's the language that we use and tying it to constantly, like if you see something that you like, tying it, that's, you know, so important. Thanks for doing this for the community mm-hmm. or whatever. So it doesn't seem, what's the word? Like preachy. Or yeah. Like drink the Kool-Aid, like,
right. Yeah.
But it's just natural.
Yeah.
And it's like people really embody it. Cause that's what we talk about. Like it's, we live it day in and day out in the big and the small actions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that in all of these conversations that I've had with business leaders, it's very important to identify that culture and your values. And like you said, the person's values outside of being at work, if they don't align, they can't. They can maybe, you know, squish themselves into a box that doesn't fit for a little while, but ultimately it's going to come out and it's going to result in dissatisfaction.
Sure.
If they're trying to pull themselves too far away from who they are inherently. So I think that's really smart. And then I was kind of struck by the idea, you know, you're dealing with people's children, like it's the most precious thing ever.
Right.
And so you need people that are really, like you said, committed to that community and that they inherently want to do this. They want to be part of something where they're helping grow people, our future. So I think that's very important to be clear on those things. It's good, I think, to have them almost, if they aren't going to be a fit, they would self-select out before they even get through the process.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, the culture piece is so important because like what you said, if you're not happy where you are, feel a sense of belonging, feel passionate about what you do, then it's going to be really obvious in this environment, which is a lot of times really stressful.
Yeah.
And so that's something that people always say when they come to tour or come to visit, that like you can just tell that your team loves what they do so much. Like the energy is really good. And part of that right now, it's really natural because we're at a good place. However, as you know, things can change. There's always an ebb and flow. Culture is never mm-hmm. guaranteed. But for a while, you really had to cultivate that, right? You had to get the right people in. We had to do a lot of cleaning up of people that you can fit one or two of the values, but you have to have all three.
Yeah.
And so it's just become really clear what's important and what works and what doesn't. And you have to make hard choices sometimes.
Yeah.
When people aren't fitting into your culture, because one person can really make a big impact.
It can. And especially, I mean, I don't know what the size of your team is. About how many people do you have?
30.
Yeah. So it's not huge, right? So it is like it, the, I think the smaller your team, the more impactful each individual is on the whole.
Yeah.
As far as, like you said, if there's one person that's really kind of bringing it down, they're a heavy weight on a small team.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yes. Because especially what we do is so interconnected in the sense that if somebody doesn't show up, somebody else has to cover. It's not like it's one person just producing totally independently, right? Yeah. So yeah. Or if you're in a bad mood, or whatever. And that is all acceptable. And it's all about patterns, right? If you have a good relationship with your team, you express to them that you have had, you know, something tough, you're going to do your best to manage it, but you let them know, then our team picks up for that person. So that, I think that is a really big component also that we've worked hard to cultivate, is the vulnerability piece that comes with trust.
Yes.
And it's tough. Nobody likes to be vulnerable. It feels bad.
Yeah. It's scary for sure. Yeah. So what are your strategies for, like you said, I mean, this is a stressful environment. Children in general are unpredictable. I imagine when you're dealing with children with different needs, there's a lot of unpredictability. Do you have some strategies in place for your team if someone is just kind of feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be the best for these kids in this moment, I need to step away? Or do you kind of give people that, it's not permission maybe, but just kind of create that environment where you're like, you know what, it's better if you need a moment, tell somebody, step away, or just, you know, pushing through and maybe not giving that those children the best version of you in that moment.
No, absolutely. And that's part of the blessing of having all the adults in the room is that you can always have somebody to step in and you can go for a walk, or if you need to take an early lunch, you need to take off for the day, whatever it is. That we put those in place so that you know you can ask for help. And that's part of the culture of helpfulness that we've worked on pretty hard. And because we come from a team of people that are really good at what they do and have always been really good at what they do. So teaching them that, especially when we made the pivot to going, because everybody used to be like in people's homes by themselves. So they were always the best in the room.
Right.
And now you move from into a classroom with five or six other people that are equally as good as you and have strengths and weaknesses just like you do. So managing that was a really interesting transition that we had to work with for the team that we thought would be like so fun. Like, 'cause it is great. Like, oh yeah, now we're not alone. We're all going to be together. But they had to understand how to do this in the presence of other people that they greatly respected.
Yeah.
And so it took, I think that really brought us as a culture closer together and a greater level of depth and vulnerability with each other, because saying like, you know, I need your help, or I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Like, this is how I'm going to work through it. So it made everybody stronger and us stronger as individuals.
Yeah. That's interesting. You touched on something I hadn't really thought about, but so In working with children with autism, did it typically used to be something that people were in individual homes and these? So, wow, you're kind of providing like a dual service there, in that now these children are getting that social interaction that maybe they weren't getting. That didn't even occur to me, actually.
Yeah, that's it. So,
yeah.
And with autism, such a big piece is the social communication. And when we're in homes and you're just one-on-one with an adult and the kid, you're not able to really work on those peer interactions.
Yeah.
So that's why to us, getting together in the group environment was so important, because we can both work on the peer interactions. And then if kids are struggling with more skills and they need more of the one-on-one work, we can do that as well. So it gives us some incredible flexibility to we really believe that we've brought together the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, you know, and I'm not very well educated in autism, so please correct anything I say that's not proper or not right. But I mean, obviously, we all know there's the spectrum.
Yeah.
So are you dealing with kids all along the way there?
Yeah, we are. We have kids that are nonverbal. So communicate through gestures, and or even like some of our really young kids may not initially be making eye contact. So we just start there because eye contact is so important for understanding what other people are saying or communicating. And right. think about how much nonverbal communication we use daily.
Right.
And then we have kids that are highly verbal, have tons of skills, and it would be very difficult for anybody to in. Most of the time in our classrooms, if you walk in, it's hard to tell who has autism and who doesn't.
Yeah.
And part of that is our ability in these classrooms to provide the support that every child needs.
Right.
So we scaffold so that every child is able to be successful in any interaction.
That's good. So I think we might have touched on this in the intro, but you have the classroom is or the preschool, so up to age five, probably,
yep.
right? And then you have some after school programs and then breaks and camps that you offer during school breaks. Are those structured as a learning environment as well, the after school programs, and at what ages do you serve there?
Yeah, so those go up a little bit older, and we haven't gotten them started yet. We'll be starting them in the next few months. And we have preschool aged, and then we also have up to about 8 years old. And those are your real, like, typical kind of groups where you would have, like, a soccer group camp. Mm-hmm. The word is escaping.
Like sports?
Like, yeah, well, just
yeah,
like once
a week.
Yeah,
kind of
exactly.
Activities.
Just
okay.
like once a week. Or we have a science one.
Yeah.
We have different music classes, things like that.
Okay.
And so where it came from for us was a lot of times in autism intervention, you have things they call social groups, which are great. You get people together and they learn how to communicate. But our big thing is we want all of our children to be as independent as possible. And we always ask the question, if this kid didn't have autism, what would they be doing? And they would be in science camp or
yeah.
they would be in a soccer class. So we provide those classes and then embed the teaching strategies into whatever we're doing, because that is the most natural way that kids learn. That's what they're going to be doing, right?
Right.
So
right.
that's how we've really approached this. And the inclusive is really great for, like we talked about before, both kids with and without autism, because the kids without autism get all of the different support and the adult interaction. And they also just get an understanding of difference and
yeah.
a sense of community.
Yeah. And this will be a little educational piece for myself and then hopefully anybody listening. As far as, you know, I think we're all very aware now of the labels that we give each other and how that affects who we become as people. When you're working with these children, you know, the kids are probably aware of who has autism and who doesn't. What are you teaching them as far as, you know, what language are they using in that environment to describe one another? Or is there, I'm not asking the question properly,
And I think you would be surprised that the kids don't start putting labels on things yet because they're so curious.
It's the adults.
Yeah. So they don't categorize. What we talk about is like a behavior. If a kid is having a hard time in a situation, we'll just say, you know, Johnny's having a hard time with this activity. He needs some extra support. He needs to take a break. If Susie's watching and sees Johnny struggling because she feels empathy for him. So we'll explain it that way. We don't ever explain it in terms of the diagnosis.
Yeah.
It's just about the behavior and how we're just helping the other kids to feel calm and safe.
Yeah. And I mean, when you're talking about preschoolers, they're all still having bad days
right.
and bad behaviors and
right.
yeah, and acting out here and there. So it's not unique just to the children with autism, I'm sure.
Right. But it is a conversation that we're still having and honestly figuring out. We have a really important component of our program is also parent training.
Yeah.
And it's not just like parent training one-on-one. We get the parents together as a cohort because we found that it's such a big life-changing event when your kid, and this is specifically for parents of kids with autism, get a diagnosis, because everything that you've kind of thought parenthood would look like is put into question. And a lot of times all of your friends up to that point have typical kids. And so you don't know how to communicate with them about what's going on. So we have created a community of people that can come together and talk about their experience and also talk about things that have worked for them and areas that they need help and get that sense of belonging, because that's so important. But back to the conversation earlier, a piece that's come up a lot is how they explain to other families and other kids
right.
about their child with autism, because it is, although it's so much more common and understood than it was 5 years ago, and especially 10 years ago, it's still something that a lot of people don't have personal experience with.
Right. Absolutely.
So yeah, we talk with parents about how to communicate their children's differences and strengths and everything that makes them unique.
Yeah. And also probably how they are interacting with their child at home. Because they, like you said, if they're learning at the same time, it's, you know, especially if it's their first child or their first child with this diagnosis, no one teaches us how to be a parent, but right. Nobody teaches us how to parent a child that has special needs. So yeah, there's probably a lot that, do you have programs where the parents come in and can kind of, number one, connect with other parents so that they have that as a resource?
Yeah, that's part of our model. Our model is really holistic in the sense that our goal is to help build parents' self-reliance and like capacity building, right? Mm-hmm. That's a huge component. So it is a requirement, actually, that all parents with the kids who are identified participate in parent training. And it's a 12-week program, and they come in once a week, and that's when they're with a group of other parents, and we talk about strategies, and we use the Early Start Denver model as our basis. And it's mostly routine-based, but how to communicate or how to increase communication and increase wanted behavior and decrease unwanted behavior. And a lot of it is really play-based and routine-based. So we're not saying sit down and have therapy with your kid for an hour. We're saying like, right. How in your everyday routines can you incorporate strategies to help your child to increase their attention to you, to help increase their communication, their play skills, their interaction with their siblings? So that's a huge component. And then once a week also, we go into the home so we can help them to work on the actual routines, because it's hard if they're explaining like what's going on in the home unless we see it.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can know, because it could be something as simple as, hey, what if you rearrange the toy room in a way that makes Johnny more likely to have to ask you for a toy as opposed to being able to just grab it on his own, because that is helping him to learn to communicate and to value you as a play partner because you can help him.
Right.
So all of these things we work on weekly. And then it's also really important because the families learn from each other and also get a really strong sense of belonging and community.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it would be hard. I don't think that I would, you know, if I were a parent in that situation, it's not intuitive because these children do not think the same way.
Right.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And it's actually really fun because you'll hear like the most frequent comments from parents are like, oh my gosh, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
I can do that. And you just see them like frantically running down like, okay, I can do that in bath time. All right, wait, I can be having him, you know, do like practice this skill. Wow. There's just all these like light bulbs going off all over the place because parents, and especially parents that have similar experiences than you, are saying that this works for them.
Right.
So it just automatically comes with some credibility. Whereas if other parents that don't understand what you're going through have said that they've tried things, you might be a lot more likely to say like, yeah, but that's not going to work
for
me.
That's not my kid. Yeah, right. Absolutely. And I think just relieving that frustration on both sides, because the child is probably frustrated when they can't, you know, communicate or they're not, because they're just trying to live life too, but it's not going the way that they are expecting it, probably because there's just that disconnect, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I like that you go into the homes and really help them on that level as well.
Yeah, yeah. We had one of my favorite quotes from last week was one of the moms at the parent training said, I feel like I'm not only having breakthroughs with my son, but I'm also having breakthroughs with my husband. Because the parent training was helping him, like giving him intentional strategies to interact with his son. And like you said, nobody is taught how to be a parent. Right. But if people can help you to play, to communicate, and you can put it, you feel so much more effective as a parent, right? And then self-efficacy is so powerful. It leads to hope. It leads to joy. It leads to all of these things that help our parents to feel like they're doing a good job. Because other times there can just be this intense feeling of hopelessness, like they can't do anything right, especially if their child can't communicate with them what they want or need. So our goal is always to try to increase that communication so we can make sure that everybody's getting what they need.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did this become a passion of yours? How did you get involved with this school?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah.
I started in a nonprofit literacy program. So I, out of college, started as the volunteer coordinator, and then ended up just kind of by chance as the executive director. The executive director got let go and I was the next obvious person. Went and got my master's in education and then taught middle school. This is just a very, like, it seems like none of this makes sense. But, and then I went to ASU and got my PhD in community resources and development and taught college and was the director of the Nonprofit Leadership Alliance, which is focuses on helping students to learn leadership skills in the nonprofit field. So then my wife was a psychologist, Dr. Amanda Wood, and needed help. She's really good clinically, but not in the organizational leadership piece. So I ended up leaving ASU because I wanted to create something of my, like, of my own. I wanted us to be able to create something that we felt was really impactful and we had more of an ability to change the culture. And I always thought I wanted to be a professor, and there were lots of good things, and it's just such a large organization that you can have impact in your classes, but it's hard to change the greater institution.
Right.
So I ended up joining Young Mind Center, and then Amanda and I had always talked about creating, like, bringing together really both of our skills and dreams into this community center, and just kind of decided to pull the trigger. And so we went for it without probably knowing very much, which if we knew now what we know then, I know we wouldn't have done it. So I'm thankful that right. We went in a little blind.
That's with most things that are huge, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of us that could share what our, and you mentioned impact, like we all want to have an impact. And in the end, you realize you are, but sometimes you're like, gosh, I don't know if I knew, but if that's the beauty of it.
Right.
A lot of great things happen because we're so naive. We believe we can do it.
Yeah. And I think I heard, I don't remember who it was, but there's studies on, like, really great leaders that have started incredible organizations, and they generally are the least realistic about how likely failure is.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're not, and that's why they don't talk themselves out of things, which most people, me and almost every other endeavor I've always dreamed of, I just came up with all the reasons why it wouldn't be successful. And it was so important for it to be successful that it was almost not an option.
Yes, exactly.
To
you
think about
do it when failure is not an option.
That's it. Like, yeah. It just needed to exist.
Yeah.
So that is how I got involved.
That's very cool. So you hinted at it. You touched on it. So talk about what it's like to work with your partner, with your spouse every day.
Well, it is a dream come true, Amanda.
She's going to hear this.
Yes. No, it's a real challenge, especially when it's something that you're both so passionate about. And it's really early in the process. We work an absurd amount.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like work. And it's kind of funny when
that's when you know you're doing good work, though,
yeah.
Right? So, if it's giving you energy rather than draining your
exactly.
energy.
Exactly. Yeah. But it can be challenging. And we've had to bring someone from the outside in to help us mm-hmm. with some strategies, because we also, it's funny, like if I set a meeting with you and I set a meeting with five other people, I'm going to show up to those meetings. If I set a meeting with Amanda, I would always push it back. And then it would be the end of the day and it wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. So we found that we weren't, like, holding those meetings that we needed with as much importance as with other people. And it's so important because our relationship really establishes the culture.
Yes.
If we're doing well, if we are working well together, if we are respecting each other, if we're having hard conversations, we're modeling all of that for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to get through it. But I will tell you, it was rocky there. We went through a gnarly remodel, 11,000 square feet down to the studs, months and months and months of things going wrong every single day. And that was rough.
Yeah.
Because there were people in our space. We had to move in because we had to get started. We told people we were going to open. We had kids waiting. So getting through that was tough. But now that that's behind us, I think you can look at this beautiful space that we've created that is truly remarkable. You should go to the website to see the pictures.
Yes. Yes.
And I think just knowing, like, together we got through that, we can get through anything. And we were able to do it through all these challenges. So it is challenging and it is also, I don't think we'd be able to do it with anybody else.
Right.
Because if we were in a relationship with anyone, they wouldn't understand the commitment to this organization. And as opposed to like understanding that we're doing it for each other and to help each other build this together.
There's definitely something to be said for that common mission, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if you follow Impact Theory, Tom Bilyeu. And he's got a bunch of different companies. But anyway, my point being, he's super successful, but works with his wife. And they talk a lot about that and having to create those boundaries. So, you know, you have to be able to have your work relationship and you have to be able to turn it off and maintain your home relationship.
Yeah.
Because you can't really let one or the other suffer. And you also mentioned something that I think is important when you're running a company together and you're both in a facility with your team members every single day. You can't bring your personal differences or, you know, any arguments or any of that stuff, because it will make them feel insecure in their job. If they see that the two of you aren't doing well, then they're going to wonder, is the company not doing well? You know, is the business okay? So you have to really be careful about what you are modeling for your team.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the same side, that's a slippery slope. So if you cross a boundary and it's dangerous and there could be fear involved, and if you are able to have healthy conversations that are really challenging and you're bringing up different perspectives, then that is so helpful and healthy to model for your team.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are also a culture of mostly women.
Right.
And so we have really had to practice how to disagree.
Right.
And how to bring up, like, how to stand up for ourselves and how to talk about what we think is the way to go, because we're also transdisciplinary, which is very different. So we have, let's say, a psychologist approaches something really different than a speech language pathologist. So we have to have conversations about why we approach things different way, because our goal, like transdisciplinary, you don't just stay in your lane. Like, you come together to create something greater than the sum of its parts, right? So we have to be able to have those conversations to say, okay, well, we're going to pull this from what you're doing. We're going to pull this from occupational therapy. And then we're going to pull this from behavior analysis. And we're going to bring it together because we truly believe there's something symbiotic in how these different things, how these different components work. So those hard conversations, without them, we wouldn't be able to create anything different. We would just be replicating what's out there.
Yeah.
And what's the point of that?
Right.
So I do think, in terms of, because if you respect somebody and you know them well, you're able to have difficult conversations more easily, I think.
Yeah.
So that is something that's the good side of a partner.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you can practice that same thing we were talking about with making sure you've got your, you know, five positives to every one negative.
Right.
And I think I believe this in my life, as far as, you know, when you're trying to raise your children or whatever it is, but what you focus on, you get more of.
Yeah.
So that goes back to that focusing on the positives. So if we can keep our attention there, you see more positive, you'll get more positive.
Yeah. That's something that, we always talk about. Tony Robbins has a quote that's where focus goes, energy grows.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly how I was trying to sum it up. That's it's great. So as far as culture, and this, obviously we're talking about, this is not an easy job that you're asking folks to do and show up for every single day. So there's got to be some level of turnover that you're challenged with when you're looking for team members. So what are your strategies for keeping those great, when you find a fabulous employee that, you know, like, you want to hang on to them, what are your strategies for keeping that and then attracting more of that type of person?
So I think it's important that it's like, generally we don't approach it from the individual. It's about, like, we just have always approached it that we put the team first, because we truly believe that if your team is treated well, you are going to be able to provide the absolute best services possible. Mm-hmm. So we've made some really hard decisions over the years that in our field of people are working, especially when you're in home, sometimes until 8 on weekends. And so just for health reasons, for boundaries, we first stopped doing sessions on Saturdays, and then we stopped doing sessions until a certain time, because our team, in order to be at their best, that's what is going to be the most meaningful for children's growth.
Yes.
So we have always put our team first. We've also just made some really big, anytime we ask for something from a team, like, one of the most important factors is the commitment piece, dependability. We've had some amazing team members over the years However, they just had a really hard time showing up because of various reasons. Like, you could have things going on in your life that you can't control. And at that particular time, then you're not a good fit for our organization.
Yeah.
So because we expect dependability, we have to be able to return it. So in this field is also 99% of organizations in the autism intervention are hourly. Their employees with very few, if any, benefits. So let's say I go to work with you and you're sick. I just lose those hours because I don't have to work. So what we've done is we've turned all of our team members are salaried. They're full-time salaried with really incredible benefits. So it's just more about investing in our team, because we truly believe that if we invest in our team, then we're going to have the greatest organization that we're able to create.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely like the way of work of the future is people have to recognize that. And I love that you touched on the fact that you kind of have to respect that they need rest and they need breaks from this, and they aren't going to have their best impact if you're stretching them as far as they can go.
Right.
You definitely need to encourage them to, like you said, go home, be with their own families and have their own life on the weekends, or, you know, whatever those hours are. I mean, sometimes we all have to step outside of that to contribute. But if it's not the general expectation, if you're showing them that you do value that, I think that's a good way to keep those employees happy and keep them rested so that they aren't burning out.
Right.
You know, and they aren't just like, oh, God, I just got to get out of here. So that said, are you guys hiring, or is there, do we want to direct anybody to a career
page? Yeah, we are hiring. We just started 5 new people last Monday, but we will be hiring again. We plan on starting another group of people in March. So at, www.youngmindcommunity.org, if you go to the resources link, there is a join our team.
Yep, I see that there. Same address people can go to if they're looking to find someplace for their kids or want to take a tour or get in touch with you, learn more.
Absolutely.
Everything is there. Yeah, and there are some great pictures. I'm watching the site scroll by now. It looks like a beautiful facility. And I can't remember now if we said this before we got on air or if we've said it since we were on air, but you're in the North Phoenix area.
Right off the 51. Super convenient.
Okay.
Yeah, we got awesome. This old piece of land. It used to be the original Scottsdale Christian Academy. Was shut down by when the 51 went through. Like, half of the property got kind of cut off. So the Department of ADOT has owned it since the late 80s. And that's why it was such an undertaking to do this construction project. Right. But it's an incredible property that is really convenient to everything, has beautiful views, and we have 4 acres. So we feel really lucky.
Yeah. And being right off the freeway, that's great for working parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the hours for the preschool?
The school day is 9 until 2:30. And then we do have extended day for those who need it from 8 to 9 and then 2:30 to 5:30.
Oh, fantastic. So that's a solution that would work with pretty much any family.
Yep, we found it has.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. Any other things you would like parents or listeners or anybody to know about the school? Anything I didn't touch on?
I don't know. I feel like I've been talking a lot.
That's good. No, it's been super fascinating. I actually did not realize it until you shared that you have a PhD. And I mean, you're very well educated yourself as well as your wife. And so it sounds like these children are in excellent care.
They are. I guess that we have an incredible combination of really well-educated, highly skilled, and just compassionate and fun people.
Yeah,
I would just hope, like, I would just say, come check us out, because I promise you've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic. Okay, so it's youngmindcommunity.org. The center is not part of the URL, right?
You got it.
Anybody looking for you on LinkedIn can find you, right? Sarah Mertel, Mertel. We'll include all of this in our show notes and everything else. Social pages that you want to share or anything?
Facebook, we have frequent updates there. That is just /youngmindcommunity.
Okay. Fantastic.
And then Instagram, same thing. We've kept it pretty simple.
That's the way to do it. It's the easiest way for folks to find you. So yeah, anybody that's interested, go check it out. Give you guys a call.
Please.
Learn more about what you have to offer, whether your child has autism or not. Sounds like a fantastic environment for them to spend their day. So,
and early childhood educators, we are really looking for people that are interested in changing the game because we also believe we can do some incredible things in inclusive education.
Yeah.
So if that's somebody that you know, or you, send them our way.
Yeah, excellent. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. It's been great chatting with you.
Thank you.
And this has been Culture Crush RX. I'm your host, Deb Karen, with Anahata Marketing. Very proud to be part of the Phoenix Business Radio X community. We are hitting your airwaves in partnership with Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism of Arizona. And as always, I hope you have enjoyed this conversation and that you have taken a few tidbits away that can help you build a better life and a better team. Until next time.